Tuesday the 17th of June, Yudav David Sivon, Rabbi Yaakov Leonard, Parsha Shalach, Rectifying the Cry for Generations.
I've heard remarkable things about this community, about this congregation. I feel very honored that I have an opportunity to speak to such a chashuv group. The pasuk says in the parsha, it says the infamous pasuk, "V'tisa kol ha'ed aviv yos kolam," that the entire congregation there heard the report from the Meraglim, and they lifted up their voice, "V'yivku ha'am b'lailahu," and that the nation cried on that night. The Or Chaim is bothered by this language of the ha'am. We know that we're referring to the entire congregation. It says they lifted up their voice, so we should just say "V'yivku b'lailahu," and they cried on that night. What's "V'yivku ha'am"? Says the Or Chaim that this is perhaps what's bothering the sages and the Chazal when they say in Saita, "Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Atem b'chisim b'chiyah shel chinam, ani ekfal lechem b'chiyah d'zeres." You cried a cry for no purpose. I'm now going to establish for you the cry and the cry for the generations. Says the Or Chaim that what Chazal are learning are that the cry that congregation had, the lifting up their voice that nation did on that night, the entire nation did, when they heard the report from the spies, that was the cause that for the Vayivku Ha'am, that the call Yisrael for the generations should cry on that night of Tisha B'Av. It's really a very, very difficult chazal to understand that this should be the source of such, this cry, this sin was such a serious sin that in many ways more serious than the Chet HaEgel, this should be the reason that for generations we should cry that the Churban of the first base of Mikdash, the second base of Mikdash, and ultimately the exile all is rooted basically in this particular cry, in this sin that the Meraglim. I believe that one thing that we do know is that the sages here are teaching us not just that we should feel sorry for what our forefathers have done when they cried. It's giving us also an insight in ultimately what would be the rectification of the base of Mikdash's destruction. If we understand what the head of the Meraglim was, we understand exactly what they did wrong, then we could better understand how to rectify that. So I think what I'd like to do this morning a little bit is discuss, to go into the Tzukim, into the Rashi and the Ramban, how they learn what took place exactly with the Meraglim, what exactly was the source of the problem there. And thereby, maybe we could come to understand exactly what Chazal is teaching us and how to be able to apply the lesson. So, as we know, Klal Yisrael asked the Meraglim to go and explore the land, and they asked them to see Ru'isem Esa'aretz Mahi. Explore the Esa'am Hayoshev Aleha. Go look at the nation that's there. Hachazaku Im Afet Ma'at Im Rav. Are they strong? Are they weak? Are they many? Are they few? Maha'aretz Asher Hu Yoshev Ba. Is it Toiv or Ra? The Arim, the Machanim, the Mivtzarim. Is it in fortified cities, or are they out in the open? So the Meraglim go and they tour Eretz Yisrael, and they come back at the end to report. When they begin their report, it says that they come back and the first thing they say to Klal Yisrael is, "It's Eretz Zavas Chalav U'Dvash." It's a land flowing with milk and honey, a beautiful land. Rashi is bothered. We're bothered. We know that if the intention of the spies is to ultimately dissuade us from conquering Eretz Yisrael, why are they beginning with a praise runs counter to their purpose? The Rashi says the famous words that he says, "The kol dvar sheker she'ein oimim b'tach emes b'tchila in miskai." That if you don't have in any false ideology, if you don't have any emes mixed in, then there's going to be, it's not going to be compelling. There's going to be no kiyum to the ideology. The ideology that would give any strength to any false religion or to any false ideology that exists must be because there is, at the root, there is some truth there. There is some truth lying within. Here we're saying clearly that the spies were coming back to report basically something which was sheker. There's a lie here, and that's why they began by saying that Eretz Yisrael is really quite a beautiful place to conquer. What was the lie though? Where was the lie in the spy in the report of the spies that we should see that we can refer to their testimony as ultimately a lie? And we see here, whatever we say, whatever we're going to say, we see here from Rashi that part of the problem, part of the problem at least, is that maybe the primary problem is that what they came to do is they said a lie. There's a lie here. Where's the lie? They come on and they say, the cities are fortified, the people who live there are giants, Amalek is in the south. All of this we know to be accurate. Everything that they tend to report now is accurate. In fact, as we know, Moshe Rabbeinu later in Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, in many ways, basically just confirms what they said. The language of Moshe Rabbeinu was, you're going to come and encounter at the end of the 40 years. He says you're going to come and encounter a nation of giants and fortified cities that are stronger than you. And we're going to go now and conquer them. So we know that in fact, indeed, that the inhabitants were giants, and in fact, that the land was fortified. So where's the lie? So the fact is, we know also that the Meragim say the pasuk says that they were v'yotzi diba l'aretz. Now the Ramban says there's a very important distinction between the language of being moitzi diva and being mevi diva. Being moitzi diva, the havas diva that you have by Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef HaTzadik was when he brought the Lashon Hara, he was mevi diva about his brothers to his father. Mevi diva implies that he didn't add anything, he didn't fabricate anything. He just brought the matter and brought it over to his father. He went over and he saw what he saw, what he had seen his brothers do. He went and he relayed that to his father. But by saying the words by Yotzi Divalar, they brought forth, they didn't just bring, they brought forth, they brought out a new matter in their description of Eretz Yisrael. That implies that they lied. Where was the lie? Says the Rambam. What's the Hitzah Divo? Like the pasuk goes on to say, that they said, Eretz Echelos Yeshveha. It's a land that consumes its inhabitants. So the Ramban learns that was the lie. That was the lie. That they came forth and they said, the Eretz and the Eretz Yisrael is uninhabitable. It's a place only for giants and for big fruit, but the weather that's there and the climate is uninhabitable for a regular person. No yizbalu oysam mizgei b'nei adam ha-beinayim. A regular average person cannot survive in such a land. So there we have a very explicit, clear lie. The problem is that Rashi does not learn that way. Rashi brings the Medrash that says that on that pasuk, that the Meragim is related. They said, "B'kol makom she'avarnu, every place that we passed, matzan kavim mit, we saw them bearing their dead. We saw them bearing their dead." And the Medrash goes on to say that a Kodesh Baruch Hu did it as a toivah for Klal Yisrael, because he wanted that the inhabitants of the land would be involved in their own mourning. They wouldn't be late, they wouldn't pay attention to the fact that the Meragim were there. But what happened was Rashi saying, Eretz Echelos Yeshveha means that they came back and relayed what they actually indeed saw, that they saw that the nation was actually involved in their burial, and they saw this as a land that consumes its inhabitants. So even on that pasuk, Rashi also there learns that there's no lie. There's no lie. So where's the lie? Where's the lie? And Rashi throughout, Rashi goes on to say that when they describe themselves as Nimolim in their eyes, he very clearly seems to express that everything is actually accurate. Everything is factual that they relate. So where's the lie? Some, I think, want to say perhaps that the lie is in their commentary of the facts that they relate. The fact that they say, SSP Oz Ha'am, we are unable to conquer. But I find it very difficult. How is that a lie? I think if anything, all you see there is that when they say that we are unable to conquer this land, we are not going to succeed, you see fear, genuine fear. And in fact, I think it's also pretty clear from the Medrash that's indeed what they were, they said, Chazak hu mimenu, is stronger than us. And Chazal learned, Darshan, Chazak hu mimenu, Chazak hu mimenoi, that there was they're speaking about a Mila, they're talking about Hashem, that there was a heresy in their claim. And they really had a genuine fear. So even that, to call that a lie, to say that what they were laying was a lie because their commentary, their explanation of the fact was that we were not able to conquer, that's not called a lie. Where's the lie? So I want to suggest that there's perhaps a very important fundamental principle, what Torah considers to be a lie, what Rashi maybe considers to be a lie. And the idea is maybe that even if one relays everything that's 100% factual, if there's an agenda, if you come in with a bias, and you come in and make your analysis, that's called a lie. And just to bring this idea out, I think that's to enter into politics, but when this Chas v'Shalom is a suicide bomb, if the news comes and relates facts, on that day of the suicide bomb, they come and they interview the mother of the suicide bomber, or the Arabs that were trying to come in to get employment in the land, and they were denied and access into the Arab Israel. What the news is relaying is 100% factual, but the commentary is a lie. That's called sheker. That's called sheker because when they approached the information that they were receiving, they came in with an agenda, but they came in with a bias. That report is coming as a lie. And I think that's in fact what Rashi stresses. Rashi is very fascinating. Rashi is bothered by the fact that the pasuk says that Vayashuvu mitu ha'aretz, they came back from exploring the land. Miketar ben yoy, at the end of the 40 days. Vayelchu vayavoyu al Moshe, they left and they came to Moshe. But there's a problem. Why did they left? They should just say, and they came to Moshe. We know that they left. They left and they came to Moshe. So Rashi says that the Torah here, based on the Medrash, the Torah here is coming and teaching us, Mahu vayelchu, says Rashi. L'hakish halichosim bi'osar. Ma bi'osim be'etzera, af halichosim be'etzera. That when they left, they came with a bad intent and they came back with a bad intent. Even when they left, even when they set out to explore Israel, they left with a bad intent. That right there, I think, shows you that's called the lie. That's the lie. To come and analyze Eretz Yisrael, they were asked to do, what's with this Eretz? Are they strong? Are we going to be able to conquer? That to come in and have a preconceived notion of what I want to see when I get there, to have an agenda, that's called sheker. And what their agenda was, that's immaterial for our discussion. Now, I think some do say they didn't want to lose their positions of stature that they had in the Midbar. Some, I think, the Kubalim say that they didn't want to lose the ability to be able to conceive of Torah through the way they were able to conceive of it in the desert with eating the man. They were able to reach higher and higher levels of understanding, which they were afraid when they came to Eretz Yisrael they would only be able to achieve through much harder work. But whatever the motivation is, that's called sheker, and that is certainly a part and parcel, I think, of what the problem with the head of the Meragim was. But that's Rashi. Now, Rashi doesn't say that's the primary chet. Doesn't say that that's the main issue here. But we know that the Ramban does not learn like Rashi. The Ramban, as I mentioned, learns that really until they said Vayeretz Echelet Yosheha, there was no sheker. He's looking at the facts. The facts that they expressed were all accurate. They were all true. So the Ramban himself says, where that really he asks a similar question to what we asked. He asks, all the Meraglim really did was they reported as they were told. They came back and gave the report what they were asked to report. He says, so what did they do wrong? He says, Al takshoyf, ki hayat pishon the omam eretz echelos yoshveh. Don't think that the real primary problem of the Meraglim lies in the fact that they lied. Lies in the fact that they said eretz echelos yoshveh, that the land is uninhabitable. That's not the problem only. Because you see from the psukim like that, you see that Kalev already was beginning his protest of what the Meraglim said way before they said Eretz Yisrael. There already was a very large fight taking place. What was the fight about? What was the problem? So Ramban says that the Iker Risha, the Resha, the evil of the Meraglim, is in the fact that they said Ethes ki anta am, so we are unable to conquer. These are the man's words. Aval rishon b'milas efes. She moira al devar efes. V'nimna mina adam. She efshar b'shumenya. To say efes, that we're unable to conquer this, that it is impossible to succeed here, that's their evil. Now, it's very difficult to understand why that's called so evil. Especially if I'm right, that they really genuinely were afraid. That's called evil, and that's an evil that really warrants such a serious decree. Destruction. Isolation by shame. Maybe to perhaps shed a little bit of light, I think, onto what we see in the Ramban. There's a Gemara in Brachos, Daf Samach. It says, "Ahu Talmida de Havika Ozel Basre de Yishmael Rabbi Yossi." One of the students of Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, was following him, Beshuka de Tziyai, in the market of Tziyai. Chazi de Kam Maschit. Shmuel Rabbi Yossi saw that his student was afraid. Omalei chatoat, you're a sinner. Dechsiv pachadu b'tzion chatoi. They feared in Tzion, they feared the sinners. Yishmael Rabbi Yossi is learning that that's a sin. That's a sin. Now, I would have learned the Gemara maybe before this parsha, really. I would have understood that what Yishmael Rabbi Yossi was saying to his student was that because I see that you're afraid, it must be that you're a sinner in another area. Because if you were really clean, if you were really true and loyal to Hashem, there would be nothing to be afraid of. You wouldn't have fear. That the fear would be a simon, it would be an insight to know that you really are a sinner in another respect. But perhaps you could say otherwise now. You could now say that the very fact that you're afraid is a sin. That's what I think the Messiah Hashem also learns here. That the sin itself is the fear. What's wrong with having fear? Clearly it's a lack of bitachon. It's a lack of trust in Hashem. You know, the Sefer Orchat Tzadikim writes to when he works on all the different midas that he has in the Sefer, he sets everything up with opposites. So there's a midah of Ava and Sina, love and hatred. And you have a midah of generosity, nedivus, and kamtzonus, and being selfish and miserly. The opposite he has of simcha, he writes, is not atzus, it's not sadness, it is daga. Concern, worry, fear. The fear and happiness are opposites. And he writes there, he quotes verbatim, no b'shem, but the Chovetz Chovos, in his section on simcha, he quotes the whole section he has there on bitach. That really at the heart, at the root of what simcha is trust in Hashem. And the opposite of having trust in Hashem is having fear. The requirement that we have that's placed upon us to be ones who trust in Hashem is, as we know, central to our whole avodah. Like the Ramchal writes, that the purpose of all the Torah that we learn, the purpose of everything is that we should be playing to the other HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that should turn to Hashem, that we should be boichim al HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's a very strong tevia on us that we should be ones who have trust in Hashem. And we actually see this an amazing thing. I mean, in Parshas Ki Tzavoi, all of the very terrible curses that are there comes to the conclusion by saying, because why are these curses here? Tachas asher lo yivdu Hashem b'simcha v'tuv leivav. Because we didn't serve Hashem with simcha and tuv leivav. Because we didn't serve Hashem with simcha, we should have all these clothes. This is such a serious crime. I believe that in order to understand this, I think that we can say that yes, that at the root, at the heart of what's being asked from us is to turn to our HaKadosh Baruch Hu, especially after we know and we saw the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf that we stood and we saw, we know that. Those ideas that we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the whole world, that has to be something that's integrated into our senses. But just to know that and then to approach our life with a fear,
That's called a chet. That's called a terrible chet because we're not living what we know to be true. The chet of the Maragda and the Ramban, I think, is saying is that we're not living with the clear, true emunah and true bitachon in the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Now, I believe that we have now two very distinct understandings of what the problem of the Maragdim here is. On one hand, the chet of the Maragdim is like Rashi seems to say, and stress, that they came and they approached with an agenda. They came with an ulterior motive, they came with a bias, and the analysis was basically an analysis of Sheker. On the other hand, the problem of the Maragdim is that they ended up crying, they ended up not having true trust and faith in the Kaddish Baruch Hu. And that lack of emunah, that lack of connection to Kaddish Baruch Hu, ultimately warrants a very, 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 very serious punishment. I think these two pshatim are not mutually exclusive. I think that they each shed light onto each other, and I think it helps us understand a little bit why the chet of the Maragdim is at the source of our problem. I think that there's a very strong insight in the fact that we could even maybe say that Ethes ki oz ha'am, that we are unable to conquer itself as a sheker. It's not a sheker because we didn't believe that we couldn't conquer. We really were crying in the tent. We really were a cry of fear. But it's a sheker because we really could conquer. And the reason why we were unable to see that and appreciate that is because we came and we approached it with an agenda. The very fact that we came in without an open mind, without a true, sincere intention to see what is being presented to us, that lack of sincerity, that lack of honesty, ultimately made us fail to be able to see that a Kodesh Baruch Hu here will give us the strength and be able to give us the courage to be able to conquer and do what seems to be impossible. That each one is, as the Rechaim is saying, each one in a certain sense is a guardian for the other, is a cause for the other. There's a symbiotic relationship between these two problems. In order to be able to understand and see that a Kodesh Baruch Hu really here does reign and does is going to be the one who's going to help us succeed, that takes that type of openness and honesty. I think that this idea expresses itself in many, many ways. When you approach a sugya in learning, when you approach the sugya in learning with an agenda, when I know that I want what I want to prove before I come and I approach that learning, then I'm not able to there see what the insight that the Torah has to offer, because the insight of the message of the Torah, the brilliant wisdom and the connection that we have to ultimate chaim that the Torah has comes from that sincerity that we do when we approach the learning. The lessons on how to be a better father, how to be a better husband, how to be a better employer, all the insights of the Torah come from trying to see what's being stated here, openly trying to look and try to understand. That midah of MS connects us to the ultimate infinite wisdom and depth of what's being expressed. And I would say that when we push our life, it's the same way. If we come in and we have an agenda, we know what we want, we don't want the lessons of the Torah to be what's ultimately guiding us, then we're not going to be able to succeed and we're not going to be able to have the ultimate high. the sin of the Maragdim led to ultimately our crying and our failure. And had we approached it, and had we really pursued this process in a way that was true and clear, I think that it's very clear that this would have been our chance for ultimate success. And the lesson maybe in Chazal when they're saying now that this was a bechil lechinam that would be koyvei bechil lederos. The lesson is that what ultimately is going to bring the ultimate redemption, the ultimate geula, is when we approach our lives with that sincere meaning. What is Hashem asking from us? What is Hashem? How is Hashem guiding us to bring us towards that ultimate truth and that ultimate chaim? When we approach it with that insight, then we are able to really fix and rectify the sin of the Maragdim and the destruction of the temple in Eitzah. You should be zeicher for the ultimate movement that we have made.